As most of you know, I don't have a loud, booming voice, so sometimes people have difficulty hearing me. How many of you have had trouble hearing me? How many wanted to have trouble hearing me? I had to ask that. There was no other way to get that one out. All right. Well, it's a combination of faults, I guess. For a while, I wasn't angling myself properly here, and for a while, the men in the back seat maybe weren't turning it exactly right, so it's a combination, but I'll try to make it a little louder, and maybe you can lean forward just a little bit more, too. We'll work together because... Since all the ones they're hiring are going to other places, it's pretty obvious you're not going to get another one here. There's an interesting story in Joshua that's a lesson, I believe, maybe a major point that applies to all of us in God's church. Joshua 9, verses 3 down to 15, you'll find that the nations to whom Israel was coming into in the land of Palestine were scared spitless. They knew that Israel had destroyed the others, and they knew that they would be destroyed also. So they used deceit. Now, some have looked upon God's guidelines to Israel toward these people as being very unfair because God had said to Israel, don't make any agreements with these people. Don't marry your son to their daughter. Don't take their daughter to your son. Don't get married in those families. And he said, because they ultimately will pull you away from the knowledge that I give you and it won't be good for you. That was the agreement God had with these nations. I don't know that those nations knew. That's why Israel was slaughtering them. But they knew that if Israel kept coming, they had it. They would be slaughtered. They would be no more. And so knowing that and being a self-preserving person, they used deceit. You'll find that these people came to Joshua and to the other people of Israel, and they said, we're from a country far away, and we've been walking all this time. You can see our shoes are worn out. You can see our bread is moldy. You can see that all that we have is not as it was, because we've come from a far, far country. And you will find that Israel was impressed with that, and they made an agreement with, because they had asked, since we are far away, then you would make an agreement with us that you would not destroy us. And so Israel was moved by what they heard, and they made an agreement with these people that they would not slaughter them. They didn't know that these people had been using deceit. They said, and they took them for their word, that we have come from a far country. You'll find that God said to Israel to destroy them because they were not honorable people. They were not godly people. They were not, as was in the sermonette, they, you know, it got so bad in the world at one time, then God said, I'm sorry I made them, and he drowned them all like rats in a pond. So these people did not have an honorable life. I know it's a harsh statement to make, but the world was better after they would have been killed if that had been happening. But Israel neglected to ask God what they ought to do. God had said, don't make an agreement with them, don't make a covenant with them, don't let your son marry their daughters, and don't let them come in and intermingle, because they will lead you away. He didn't say maybe, he said they will lead you away, and you'll go away from my truth. Israel neglected to ask God, and they made a wrong choice. The word that's important in this is they omitted to do what they should have done. Could we say that they committed the sin of omission? God told them what they were to do and were not to do, but they didn't do it. They omitted to do what God said. Sin of omission. You might say, what do you mean, sin of omission? I thought you sinned when you actually did something, not when you omitted to do something. Well, that is true. It is sin is when you do something wrong that's not in accord with God's laws, because His laws define what is right and what is wrong. And a sin is when you commit an act that transgresses God's law. That's what we call the sin of commission. We commit something. When you actually do something wrong, like idolatry, bow down to a false god, cursing, swearing, breaking the Sabbath, dishonoring parents, committing murder, committing adultery, stealing, telling a lie, and lusting. Those are committing certain sins. There are examples in the Bible. I'll give you one where in Genesis 39, Joseph, an honorable young man, a little testy young man, he told his brothers and sisters, yeah, you're all going to bow down before me someday. That didn't go over too well since he was the baby brother because they had worked hard and apparently they thought he hadn't. He was put in prison and then he was also put in, anyway, it wound up later when he was exonerated that he was in the king's palace and he had great honor and respect. And while he was doing the work for his boss, the boss's wife took a shine to him. And she kept pestering him, lie with me. Now, she didn't say, tell a lie. She said, lie with me. She asked him to do something, and his answer was a little shocking in one sense, considering what all had been done on this earth up to that time. He said, no, I can't do that. That would be a great wickedness. And he refused to do that. That would have been what we call the sin of commission. The sin of commission. Because God's way of doing things is called the way of righteousness, the way of doing things the way they ought to be done. I guess you could say that the laws of God are kind of like the way you shoot an arrow at the mark, and if you hit the mark, then you've done it good. But if you miss the mark, you miss the mark. And we sometimes say that breaking the laws are missing the mark, which is a good example of that. I think we're all painfully aware of the possibility of committing a sin, and quite often we are very, very careful not to do so. But there is another side to the story. Have you ever heard the expression, the way to hell is paved with good intentions? Have you ever made that statement? Sure. Now, what does that mean? The way to hell is paved with good intentions. Paraphrased into English, it is said, well, I was aiming to do this, but I didn't get around to it. And that's where that statement came from, this little round to it. You ought to give him one. Yes, we've all heard that expression. We may have made it. And in one sense, it is a good expression and it is a religious expression. I intended to, but I didn't get around to it. That shows that there is a sin, or I don't know if you want to call it a sin like murder, something like that, but there is an action that is an action of omission. I didn't get around to it. I omitted to do it. I didn't do it. It should have been done, but I didn't do it. And it is a sin of omission, as we call it. You just didn't get around to doing whatever it was supposed to be done that you didn't do. Let's notice an example of this in Deuteronomy 23, verse 21. Deuteronomy 23 and verse 21. Some very interesting laws in the Old Testament that are very relevant to today. Deuteronomy 23 and verse 21 says, when you make a vow, now a vow is, I will do this. Sometimes we give specifics, but I will do this tomorrow at 10 a.m. or I will do this next month. But anyway, we make a promise to God, to man, to ourselves, I will do this. You make a vow, in this case it was to God, to the Lord your God, you shall not delay to pay it. If you promised you'd do something not to God, but for God or toward God, then we best be careful what we promise God and not be delinquent on it and omit to do what we told him we would do. Now, I'm sure none of you have ever done that. I certainly haven't, but it is quite common among people that we make promises to ourselves and to God that we never get around to. I don't know that you can say it is a sin to do that, but it certainly is indicative of the principle that we are omitting to do a certain thing, and it's not right. It causes trouble, which, of course, is what sin does. He said, you shall not delay to pay it. Why? Because the Lord your God will surely require it. Fess up. Like the Godfather said, if I do a favor for you, someday you may have to do a favor for me. We forget that at times. God will surely require it of you, and it would be a sin to you. But if you abstain from vowing, it shall not be a sin to you. So making a vow, making a promise, giving your word, and not doing it is a mistake. As I said, I don't know that you can call it a serious sin, but it's certainly not good for human character, and it has the same underlying principles of a sin of omission. Omission means, actually it just means that, the act of omitting, to leave out, to abstain from, to fail to perform, to neglect. You'll find in Hebrews 2, we as Christians have this said to us, and it's along the same line as what is said in Deuteronomy about if you make a vow to God, be sure you pay it. If we promise God we're going to obey him, we promise God we're going to keep the Sabbath, we promise God we're going to tithe, we promise God we'll love our wife and take care of our children, we promise God many, many things as far as our conduct of life is concerned, but somehow we just didn't get around to it. And so we are omitting to fulfill sometimes many things that we have promised that we would do. There is an omission in our life. So in Hebrews 2 and verse 1, we must give the more earnest heed to the things we have heard. Why? Well, there's a possibility if we don't give heed, we'll drift away from it. And that's what happens many times. You just are lax today, and you're lax tomorrow, and you're lax the next day. And pretty soon it gets to be just a habit. And habits are binding on us. Habits make us slaves. We are slaves to our habits because they're so powerful. That's why you've heard it said that if you can force yourself to follow a certain habit for 21 days, 3 weeks, more than likely you'll keep that habit. I've proved that in my own life in one or two items where I tracked my actions daily and kept it where I could see it. And after the 21 days, after the months, however long it has been, then it hasn't been a problem. So it said we should give more earnest heed or pay attention to or not neglect the things we have heard, lest we drift away, which is a great possibility. We might drift away. Now, that's not a threat. It's just a possibility based on our actions. The word neglect in Greek means to be careless of, to make light of, to neglect, to be negligent, to have no regard for something. In the English, I guess you could say neglect means not to pick up or to omit to notice, to be remiss in attending or failing to do. Neglect implies a lack of sufficient attention. Have you ever heard your wife say, "You're not paying any attention to me"? And if you neglect to pay attention to her, you will be hearing that more and more. That's a living, and well, you should be hearing it more and more. If you are not doing things as a wife because you are neglecting it, you probably will hear about it, and you won't want to hear about it in marriage, but it will be necessary. Neglect implies a lack of sufficient attention. It has been said that sometimes young teenagers who are troubled in life, they do those things because they're looking for attention and they've never gotten it. The parents omit giving attention to the child in the right way. So neglect implies a lack of sufficient attention. Omit means absence of all attention. Omit is a little stronger and more serious than merely neglecting. Disregard means inattention, often voluntarily. In other words, we deliberately disregarded them. Ignore means an intention to disregard or a failure to regard something that's very obvious. Again, that would be pretty obvious in life. Overlook means a disregarding or an ignoring, usually through haste or lack of care. Slight, which in street language today is called diss. You slighted me, or you dissed me. Slight means a neglect, an omission or disregarding, often through arrogance. Well, you don't deserve that. I'm better than you. You're an ignorant. You're no more than a slave. Slight is pretty serious. Then forget, which I hear that all the time among my peers of the same age. You know, we're having trouble forgetting. And you see more and more ads on TV today. Are you forgetting things that you should be remembering? And they're going to make money out of us that way if they keep doing it. Forget is a willful ignoring or a failure to impress on one's mind. You sometimes have to impress it on our mind. And if you do it 21 days, you are impressing it on a regular basis to your mind. In 1 Timothy 4, verse 14, you will find Paul, the experienced old minister, apostle, had a lot of scars on his life because of what he had done that was wrong, and some of the things when he did right still got scars. You will find in 1 Timothy 4, he gave this very telling bit of information to his young friend, Timothy. He loved Timothy as a young son, as his son, loved him dearly. And he wasn't doing this to harass him. He was doing it to help him. In chapter 4, verse 14 says, well, first, he admonished him in the positive, "Till I come, give attention to reading, exhortation, and to doctrine." Those are the positive things. Fill your mind with it. Give your attention to it. Don't omit doing it. You know, if you go one day without reading the Bible, it's easier to go the next day. And if you go 3 or 4 or 5 days, it's easy just to give it up sometimes. So he said, "Till I come, give attention to," which is a willful personal decision. Then he said in 14, do not neglect the gift. Something we have is a gift. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the eldership. And of course, we know that can either mean ministerial talent and ability, or it can mean the Holy Spirit of God, which is given to us after the laying on of hands of those who baptized us. I learned that in the Protestant church I was a member of at 17, 18, 19. When I came to Ambassador College, I realized that I had never had hands laid on me. Therefore, if I used the Bible as an accurate guide, I never did receive God's Spirit. I was sincere. I went under the water, but I never had hands laid on me. And you find places where the laying on of hands is when God honors the faith then of that person. These are serious people, and they lay those that baptize them lay hands on them. It shows that you have faith in God, that you're willing to obey and do what God says. And it also shows that you have to deal with the human element in the service of God's church. And that is something that deceives us quite often, that, well, I don't have to pay attention to anybody. It's just me and God. Well, that's true to a degree. It is between us and God. But God, like Aaron, and you'll find the apostles, there were 12 that he left for the church, they went out and taught the truth and wasn't looked on very kindly if people just dissed them and said, well, you don't know what you're talking about. It was through the gift of the laying on of hands, or it was through the laying on of hands, that the gift of the Holy Spirit was given. I've asked people sometimes, why do you want to be baptized? And invariably they say, because I want God's Spirit, which is true, and it's a good answer. But it's not the best answer. And I usually say, well, I don't know if you know it or not, but you don't get God's Spirit when you're baptized. They act like they're stymie. You're kidding. Well, in truth, they do in a sense, because baptism and the laying on of hands are usually very close together. If you're out in the middle of a lake and you've baptized a person, you usually don't wait till you wade back in, dripping with water, something you lay hands on there. And so, in a sense, it is at the same time, and it is an integral part of the baptismal service. And so, partially in truth, they do receive the Holy Spirit. But there have been times like those people in Acts were north of Jerusalem. They were baptized by Philip, but they didn't have the hands laid on until the apostles from Jerusalem came. And that was, well, the fastest donkey would make it maybe a day and a half or two. And so to get word down there and word back, it was several days before they had the laying on of hands, which showed that they didn't have God's Spirit until it was given through the laying on of hands. So I usually explain that to them so that they understand something and not be ignorant of an important part of God's truth, because in truth, the laying on of hands shows that there is the human element in our conversion and in our baptism, in our receiving of God's Spirit. And to just cast that all away is going contrary to the way God has laid things out. So he said, don't neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by the laying on of hands. Very, very important part of Christianity. And many, apart from the Church of God, do not understand that. So he was just again, using the word neglect, which comes in line with omission. When we neglect something, it is easy to omit it. It is easy to give it up. It is easy to not be following God's ways because we have neglected something and we are omitting to do certain things. Another aspect of why we omit to do certain things, the sin of omission, is ignorance. Now, don't throw tomatoes at me yet. If I call you ignorant, I've explained this before. Ignorance does not mean you're stupid. It does not mean you're unfit for life. It does not mean that you don't have any sense at all. Ignosis means lacking in knowledge. Do you know how to pilot the NASA space shuttle to the moon? How many do? What? You're all ignorant. Then you're ignorant. Are you stupid? No. Are you unfit for life? No. Are you worthless? No. But on that one factor, you are lacking in knowledge and you are ignorant. And so sometimes we omit to do certain things because we didn't know we should be doing those things. We were ignorant, as one of our fellow brothers many years ago here in Columbus used to have a favorite saying. When he got caught doing something, he didn't want to get caught doing something, he would always say, "But boss, I didn't know." And that was supposed to erase everything that he had done he shouldn't have done. Ignorance. Let's look in Leviticus 4, verse 2. It may be a little different in the New King James, but the Old King James is very clear in this word. Leviticus 4 and verse 1 says, God spoke to Moses, so it passed along through 1. Speak to the Israelites, and here's what you are to tell them. If a person sins unintentionally, I believe in the Old King James it says because of ignorance. They didn't know that's what they should have been doing. They did not do that unintentionally to anger God. Or they didn't do it intentionally to anger God. It was unintentional. They did not know. So if a person sins unintentionally against any of the commandments of the Lord in anything which ought not to be done, and does any of them, if the anointed priest sins, then it talks about if even the priest did it. And then it talks about the sacrifice that should be brought. And what they should do, and skimming down through these verses, I don't have the New King James marked as the Old King James. Verse 13, if the whole church sins unintentionally, and the thing is hidden from the eyes of the assembly, and they have done something against any of the commandments of the Lord, and anything which should not be done, and they're guilty, when the sin which they have committed becomes known. So it was unintentional. They didn't intend to do that. And they weren't trying to sin. They just didn't understand. But still, they had broken some of God's principles. And they would have to pay because there is cause and effect. When the sin which they have committed becomes known, then the assembly shall offer a sacrifice, showing that they're... In that sense, there it was a sin. I learned this when I went to Ambassador College many years ago. I didn't grow up in a Protestant church, but the last 2 or 3 years before I went to Ambassador, I did attend a Protestant organization. And, of course, when I was in high school, grade school and high school, I played sports on the Sabbath. I did not know the Sabbath. I don't know that I'd ever heard the word Sabbath. I knew there were Jews. I don't know if I heard that Jews kept the Sabbath. But I never kept the Sabbath. I wasn't hateful toward God in doing it that way. I never kept the holy days. I didn't know I should. Why? I was ignorant. I'd never read the Bible to the point that I understood it. So I was sinning through ignorance. And after the first year of Ambassador College and the Harmony of the Gospels, putting together all that Jesus taught, I found that there was a lot in my life going back that, hey, that was wrong. And yet I did not, well, I can't say I didn't know any of, all of it was, but most of it I didn't know because I didn't know it was in the Bible. Ignorance. So it is true, boss, I didn't know. If you didn't know, then he's not going to clobber you, but you have to, when you understand it, you have to make amends and you have to begin following that. I guess the question is, why are we ignorant? And especially in this case, why was I ignorant? Why didn't I know the Sabbath? Why didn't I know the holy days? If you didn't know the Sabbath, the holy days, why was that? You remember the example of Jeroboam when he said, "Ah, it's too much to go to Jerusalem. You don't have to do that. We'll make our own little church over here, and we will make it a holy thing." And they made this calf or calves, and Israel gave up the holy days. So what happens in the next generation to the children of these people who have given up the holy days and the Sabbath and all of God's laws? They become ignorant of God's laws. They are committing many sins of omission because they didn't know, because their parents, or shall we say, someone before them, blotted out the knowledge of God from our society, our community, or our family. And so we lived according to what we knew. And in our ignorance, we probably trampled all over a lot of God's commandments, statutes, judgments, ways, because we did not know. And we were omitting many things to do, many things that God asked us to do, but we didn't know that at the time. Now we do. I think that's part of the reason why John could and did say in 1 John 1, verse 8, "Now we say we have no sin," or "if we say we have no sin." Why would a person say they have done no sin? Sometimes it would be because they didn't even know the law. They didn't know what the law had to say about it, and so they don't think of themselves as a sinful person. But I trampled all over the Sabbath. I observed Christmas. I observed Easter. I remember those when I was a little kid at the school, and there were a lot of things I did, and I trampled all over God's laws, and I didn't see it until I had started studying it. I worshiped a Jesus that kept Sunday. If I did well, he would take me to heaven. Well, I read in the Bible that Jesus didn't keep Sunday. He was at the Sabbath, the synagogue every Sabbath. He didn't believe you'd be taken to heaven. He would take you into the kingdom of God, and quite a few other things. And when I began to see that, I thought, as my mentor was famous for saying, "Ghastly! Ghastly! Did I do all that?" Sure I did, but I didn't know it was wrong. It was what my father did. It was what my grandfather did. It was what my great-grandfather did. And I didn't know any different, so I did it too. That's what you call society, in a sense. So it is because of ignorance that we may omit to do certain things and have the sin of omission. In that sense, I think we need to be careful who we allow to influence us. I know you've heard this, and I don't want to browbeat anybody, but in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, Paul was talking to the Corinthians, who felt that they were very erudite, educated, knowledgeable. They knew what to do. But Paul, knowing what they didn't know, made this statement in 1 Corinthians 15, and beginning in verse 33. He said, "Don't be deceived." You mean a Christian can allow himself to be deceived? Sure. "Evil company corrupts good habits. Now, if you have good habits, they make you a good life. If you have bad habits, you're in slavery to those bad habits. My older brother told me more than once, he said, when he was 80, 90 years old, and I wish I could quit chewing tobacco, but I can't. And he could have, but he didn't want to. And I think to his dying breath, he had a chew of tobacco in his mouth. I'm not sure. But he was enslaved to chewing tobacco. That's all he saw as he grew up, all of his friends. Well, maybe not all of them, but many. Snuff dipping was the thing in those days, and chewing tobacco. My brother didn't smoke all that much, but he certainly did chew tobacco. We can be a slave to our habits, and we can become a slave to our habits by allowing others to influence us in our habits, because they seem to know what they're doing. Awake to righteousness, he said. That means sit up, pay attention to what's going on. Awake to the right way. Don't sin. Some don't have the knowledge of God, and I speak this to your shame. So he pointed out that the ones we pal around with have a great influence on us, positive and negatively. We just need to be careful that we don't allow those who are perpetrators of negative habits to be our common companion. Doesn't mean we shouldn't be friends to them, but they're not our constant companion, because these people in Joshua's day deceitfully lied to the Israelites, and the Israelites knew, because God had said, don't leave a one of them alive, because they will take you away from me. If you let your son marry the daughter, she will lead him away. If you let your daughter marry their son, he will lead them away. Do not make contracts with them. And you say, well, God's pretty hard-hearted, isn't he? Well, if he wants to expand his family, yes, he is. If he doesn't give a you-know-what about his family, he lets them do anything they want to do. He's interested in his family. So we need to be careful who influences us, whose word we follow, because it could be by doing that, then we are omitting to do what we should have done but aren't doing. In life, we see in our life and in others bad results. We need to ask ourselves, what are we doing? Where are they taking us? What are they causing us to do? What are they causing us to omit to do that I should be doing? Have you ever failed to get somewhere because you forgot to get gas for your car? Now, you may think that's a stupid question, but think a little bit. Your goal was to get to a certain place at a certain time without any real trouble. But you didn't make it because you forgot, or you omitted to put gas in the car. And you know what happens when you don't put gas in the car? It doesn't run. You're not going to get where you went. So it can have a catastrophic influence on your plans if and when you omit to do certain things. I can speak from personal experience here. In January 1970, Dilly, our two sons, and I were on our way from New Orleans to Pasadena, California, for a sabbatical. And we had visited my relatives in Texas. We'd gotten to Arizona, and we just zipped right on through Phoenix. I looked at the gas gauge, and since I'd been there for years before, I knew the distances, and I thought, well, I can make it to such and such place. So I didn't bother to fill up with gas, and I kept going. And then we were talking, laughing, enjoying each other's company in the car, and seeing Arizona again. And we passed the Arizona-California line, and it didn't dawn on me, and we kept going on this straight line. You know, 50-mile highway never turns left or right out in those areas. And all of a sudden, I heard the car go, and I knew immediately what the problem was. I had omitted to put gas in the car. And it was, and you know, you hear the stories of the choppers, that is the Harley-Davidson freaks. No, that's not the name you ought to use, but the Harley-Davidson riders. They can be dangerous. They can be good. They can be your good friends. They can be your protectorate, or they can be the one that would do damage to you. I didn't know. And I certainly didn't want to walk away. I had no idea how far it was in the future to a gas station. I had no clue as to how far I'd come from a gas station because I wasn't paying attention. All I knew is I couldn't see one in front and I couldn't see one in back, and the car was empty with gas. And I didn't want to leave DeLee and the two boys alone for who knows how long. So not to brag, but I acknowledged my foolishness to DeLee, and I asked them that we should pray about it, and we held hands, I believe, and I admitted to God that I'd made a serious mistake, and it could have had disastrous effects, and I asked for his mercy and his favor, and then I said amen, and as I looked up, I looked in a rearview mirror, and there sat a California State Patrolman in his car right behind me. I don't know where he came from, but he sure got there quickly. He said, "What's wrong?" "I'm out of gas." Well, he said, "There's a station just over the hill." But I didn't know that. "There's a station just over the hill." He said, "Get in the car. I'll take you there." So I got in the car. Didn't miss a step. I had to borrow a gas can, I think, or buy one. And then I was going to have to walk back. And I'd forgotten how far we had driven, so I wasn't sure how long that would take. So as I walked out the door, I met a man, and he asked me where I was going, and I said, "Up there to my car. I'm out of gas." He said, "Well, I'm going to California. I'm going right by there. Hop in. I'll take you." So I didn't miss a step going or coming, but it wasn't because I was so intelligent. I had asked for God's mercy, and I to this day believe that I got God's mercy because I admitted that I had omitted to do something that a smart fellow would have done. Filled your car with gas because it doesn't run on water or air. Oh, to God we could have one that did, but we don't have that. So sometimes we don't get to where we want to go because we omit to do something that should have been done that would have gotten us there. It's very important, the action of omitting, we call it the sin of omission, is very important. Sometimes the success of a project may depend not on what was done wrong, but failure to do the necessary and the obvious. Now, that may include things that are wrong, and it may not. But the point is, we neglected to do what we should have done. At the Passover season, we're told to examine ourselves. And we would like to think that in examining ourselves, we will find nothing wrong. But we find there are things we have done wrong, maybe things that we've been omitting to do that we knew we should have. And then it said, go ahead and take the Passover, meaning positively work on it, develop your habits. I think sometimes, and I've heard it from others, and I have heard it come from my lips over the years, I'm not growing very much. I'm not growing as fast and as well as I think I should. Why is that? What's wrong in my life? Well, maybe there's nothing wrong. It could be that maybe we're not getting around to doing what we should be doing. You know, if we don't study, we're not going to grow much. If we don't pray, we're not going to grow much. If we don't occasionally fast, it will take away some of the growth that we could have had. The point is, the sin of omission robs us of a lot of growth and enjoyment in life, especially if you're omitting to do something your wife asks you to do. The joy won't be there, or she's missing a lot of enjoyment in life if she's omitting to do something that the husband has asked about over the period of time. The sin of omission robs us of a lot of growth and a lot of the enjoyment in life. You probably heard it. I've heard it. I've spoken of it over the years. The sin of omission. It is something to think about that's very, very, very important. Keep in your mind the sin of omission. Man, are you ever quiet? I hope I didn't offend you that you never speak to me again.